You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Where in British Columbia might you go to find out about living conditions in Orissa, India? You might try going to the workers of the Alcan smelter in Kitimat near Prince Rupert. They passed a motion, as did Alcan workers in Quebec, saying they would refuse, as an act of solidarity with the Indigenous and Dalit people in Orissa, to process bauxite extracted from the soil and transported to Canada for smelting into aluminum. To find out more about the neoliberal plans for resource exploitation in Orissa and the upsurge of popular opposition to it, as well as divisive Hindu-based sectarian violence, we contacted Manoranjan Mohanty earlier this week. Dr. Mohanty comes from Orissa. Currently, he's a visiting professor at the University of California in Santa Barbara, and he previously was head of the political science department at New Delhi University in New Delhi, India. I began by asking Dr. Mohanty to identify a few basic background facts about Orissa that would help a stranger like myself better understand the major dynamics in that region.
Well, the most important fact about Orissa is that it's a culturally and natural resource-wise a very rich state, though it is known for its poverty and various struggles going on right now. I think the rich archaeological sites of Buddhist excavations and the temples from 11th century onwards, they are quite famous. The name of Orissa is Utkal, meaning it is a land of art. And the natural resources are really to be taken into account. Iron ore, India's 33%, one-third of India's iron ore is in Orissa. Chromite is, 98% of India's chromite is in Orissa. 67% of manganese. Bauxite is 60% of India's bauxite. Coal, 25% of India's coal reserve is in Orissa. So like that, it is a very rich state in terms of minerals, and almost 500 kilometers of coastline. Therefore, the minerals, the coastline, the forest resources, technically 33%, at least 30% of various kinds of forest cover. Therefore, it's a highly endowed state, but unfortunately it is India's poorest state. The maximum number of people proportionately are under the poverty line. 46% of the population of Orissa is below the poverty line, below a dollar a day. And in fact, if you change it into the Planning Commission statistics, then it is even more. A rich state in terms of natural resources and culture, but people suffering from poverty, unemployment, malnutrition, high infant mortality, and distress migration. And naturally, now people are restive about it because the democratic rights consciousness is growing very fast in Orissa, and people no longer want to live with this kind of poverty and indignity.
The government and private capital seem intent on developing those rich resources and exploiting them for profit. What impact are these projects having upon the lives of the people of Orissa, particularly the indigenous First Nations people and the lowest caste Dalit people.
That's right. In fact, the kind of industrialization based on the minerals of Orissa, which the present government has accelerated, continues a strategy of exploiting Orissa's resources since the colonial days. That is, utilizing these resources for profit-making, for metropolitan development, and not for the people of Orissa. In fact, the extractive economy started during the colonial period, two rail lines, one through the western part and one on the coastal part, transporting the resources to the port city and now to metropolitan centers. You know, that has been the pattern. And agriculture, rural industries, forest-based industries, those have not been looked after. As a result, a agriculturally surplus state before independence now has become agriculturally poor, non-profit in agriculture. That is the situation today. And these new projects, and you'd be surprised, the present government has returned to power despite all this, and during its last tenure, the government of Naveen Patnaik had concluded 37 just steel and alumina project MOUs, and these projects are supposed to increase the steel production, you know, getting all these big steel companies, Mittal, Arcelor, the Tatas, the POSCO, all these companies. And right now, it is a very volatile situation. We have four major people's movements against these projects going on in the state, because these projects have caused massive displacement of tribal population, what you call the First Nation population. They have destroyed sources of livelihood, and they have completely destroyed the environment of the region. And so these are the two bauxite mining projects and alumina aluminum plants projects, one in Kashipur, in Koraput, in southern Orissa, where the Canadian company Alcan was deeply involved, and even now it is involved indirectly by supplying its technology with the Birla Group in the company called the Utkal Alumina Limited in Kashipur, Koraput. And that is a 14-year-old struggle going on there, led by the tribal people of the area. Similarly, another bauxite mining plant, bauxite mining project and alumina project in Kalahandi, Lanjigad. Kalahandi is India's most deprived, poverty-stricken state. And there, in this tribal area of Niyamgiri Hills, the British company Vedanta Resources and Vedanta Alumina and its subsidiary, the Sterlite, owned by an Indian origin person, Anil Agrawal, is trying to, it has already set up a refinery and is about to start the mining in the Niyamgiri Hills. And people are engaged in a big struggle in the Lanjigad area. Similarly, in Kalinganagar, in the coastal belt in Jajpur district, there is a big movement against the Tata Steel plant. And in that area, you have three major companies. Chinese and many others coming up. The others being the Mittal, the Jindal, and the Essar, besides the Tatars. And the Tatars want a 8 million annual, 8 million ton plant in Kalinganagar and in January 2006, when the government was forcibly trying to hand over the land of the Adivasis, the tribals, to the Tatars. People resisted and the police fired upon the tribal people and 14 people were killed. 14 tribal people were killed. And the movement is going on there against the Tata Steel project. Another big project is in Paradip, on the coast, near the Paradip port, the only major functioning port of Odisha. And this Korean steel company, Pohang Steel Company, POSCO, is wanting to set up a 12 million ton annual production plant in Paradip. And people have been agitating against that, also against displacement and diversion of water and the proposed separate captive port that POSCO wants to build besides the takeover of the agricultural land through a special economic zone. So all these four cases have been now the subject of people's movements challenging the strategy of this kind of industrialization, which is for metropolitan profit-making rather than people's development in the state.
This kind of popular resistance gets little publicity in our media here, but we have seen reports of sectarian violence, particularly the killing of Christians in Orissa. How would you analyze the phenomenon of the sectarian violence in relation to the popular resistance to the resource exploitation?
That's right. It's a very good question. And in fact, the sectarian violence, the Hindutva forces attacking Christians, the major incident in January 2000, you know, the burning to death of missionary Graham Steins and his two sons in Manoharpur, Keunjhar district, and then the attack on the Christians in the Christmas period of 2008, and then the major attack in August following the assassination of a Hindutva leader, which has caused displacement of 30,000 Christians in Kandhamal district in central Orissa. Now, you know, this is really the result of a diversion which the Hindutva forces led by the BJP have engaged in during the last 20 years as the popular consciousness demanding right to land, right to forest, right to employment and poverty eradication. As this consciousness has grown in Orissa, particularly during the last 10 years, the Hindutva forces, who were actually an ally of the present ruling party until the last elections, they have been active. And the Kandhamal incident, which really was a mobilization by Hindutva forces of the tribal people, the First Nation people, against the Dalits, who happen to be Christians in this area, was really the diversion of attention and mobilization on the issue of land and forest rights and the demand for the appropriate development in this very rich area, the area with tremendous forest resources, Kandhamal, and rare plants, rare herbs, and so on. Therefore, in Orissa today, you have, on the one hand, the radical political movements in some places led by the Maoists, in some other places by socialists, Gandhians, and these four resistance movements I mentioned, they're actually led by socialists, Gandhians, and local tribal groups. And in other areas by Maoists, like in Malkangiri, in southern Orissa, and so on. The reaction to that is the Hindutva forces who have become quite active. And I'm glad to say that in the last elections, they were defeated, not only because their alliance with the ruling party of the Biju Janata Dal broke down, but also people have begun to resist the Hindu fundamentalist forces in Orissa and in other parts of India, as the recent elections in India showed.
Well, thank you very much for this enlightening view of Orissa, and we look forward to your visit and talk in Vancouver on Sunday. And that was Dr. Manoranjan Mohanty. I spoke with him on Thursday this week in Santa Barbara, California, where currently he's a visiting professor at the University of California. Dr. Mohanty is the retired head of the Department of Political Science in New Delhi, India. He originally is from Orissa State on the northeast coast of India.